Yamuna Tira Vanakari Yara Kamadava Kunyavihari Yara Kamadava Kunyavihari Jaya Gopi Ganya Gaya Giri Varasthari Jaya Gopi Ganya Gaya Giri Varasthari Yashoranandana Vrajajanarangana Yashoranandana Vrajajanarangana Ramana Kira Vanasthari Yamuna Tira Vanakari Yara Kumara Punyavihari Yara Kumara Punyavihari Jayam Vishnupata Namahamsa Parivrajika Acharya Stotara Srishi Srimad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Pancharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitaya Gaur Bhimanande Hari Hari Bhosa Vaita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Adai Shri Asambhadavati Adai Shri Asambhadavati Adai Shri Asambhadavati Adai Shri 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 Guru Gaurangu Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 10, The Nature of Fruit of Activity. This is part of the Uddhava Gita. Lord Krishna is instructing Uddhava. Today is text number 4. Word meanings, nivrittam, regulative duties, karma, such work, sevaita, one should perform. Nivrittam, activities for sense gratification, mapparaha, one who is dedicated to me, tyajit, should give up. Jigyasayam, in searching for spiritual truth, samparvittaha, being perfectly engaged, na, not adriate, one should accept karma, any material activity, chodanam, injunctions governing. Nivritam karma sevita, parittam aparasya jet, जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये कर्मचोदनाम् विवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत प्रवृत्तं अपरस्त्यजेत् जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये कर्मचोदनाम् निवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत प्रवृत्तं अपरस्त्यजेत् जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये कर्मचोदनाम् निवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत प्रवृत्तं अपरस्त्यजेत् जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये कर्मचोदनाम् निवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो कर्मचोदनाम् निवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत प्रवृत्तं अपरस्त्यजेत् जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये कर्मचोदनाम् निवृत्तं कर्मसेवेत प्रवृत्तं अपरस्त्यजेत् जिज्ञासायां संप्रवृत्तो नाद्रिये
Translation. One who has fixed me within his mind as the goal of life should give up activities based on sense gratification and should instead execute work governed by the regulative principles for advancement. When, however, one is fully engaged in searching out the ultimate truth of the soul, one should not accept the scriptural injunctions governing fruitive activities. Report by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the words jigyasayam sampravittaha. Explains that the words jigyasayam sampravittaha refer to one who is yoga arudha, or advanced in the yoga process. So jigyasayam sampravittaha. What does that mean? Jigyasayam, in searching for spiritual truth, samparvittaha. So why is it important what this means? Because this verse talks about three different kinds of activity. Depending on what stage you're on, you act in different ways. The root word here in all of these, the root, is vritti, or vrittam. Vritti means occupation. Or what you do. Recently I gave a class about the snake. The verse was about the snake that its occupation. It eats the mouse and lives in the mouse's hole. So it's called ajaga vritti, the occupation of the snake. And another common, we use this word vritti, sakalendriya vritti manti. Krishna's body, Satchidananda Rupa, each one of his senses, sakala indriya, vritti, that occupation of each sense, manti, each sense possesses the occupation of the other senses. That's one of the characteristics of Lord Krishna. So the idea is vritti or vrittam. So we have nivrittam and pravrittam and samprovritto. The sum usually means complete or the highest in that idea. So this is why Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is going to talk about samprovrittaha, because the person in samprovritta, fully engaged in searching the ultimate truth of the soul, should not accept scriptural injunctions governing fruit of activities. So here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti, he quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita, continuing the purport. In Bhagavad Gita 6, 3, and 4, it is said, Arivaksho munar yogam parma paranam ucchate yogarodhasya tasyaiva shama paranam ucchate yadahi nendriyarteshu na karmasvanu sajjate sarva-sankalpa-sanyasi yoga-urdha-stadocyate. For one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, so this is right at the beginning of the sixth chapter, which is about yoga, the eightfold yoga system, so that's the context of this verse. For one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, which is said to be the work is said to be the means, and for one who has already attained to yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. You notice, Prabhupada, how he translates this. He doesn't say cessation of work. He says cessation of material activities is said to be the means. A person is said to have attained to yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. That's the translation for these two verses. The example may be given that an ordinary man will try to enjoy the company of a woman for material sense pleasure. This is called pravritta karma, or the path of sense gratification. Now you may notice that these words apparently seem to be used in different ways, nivritti and pravritti. Pravritta adesha bhutanam, nivritastu mahapalam. Prabhupada would sometimes translate this, it's from the Mahabharata. And basically, I guess it has the same meaning here. Pravritti adesha bhutanam, nivritastu mahapalam. The idea here is that pravritti means what you're naturally inclined to do, which for the embodied soul is sense gratification. So the verse is that everyone is naturally inclined to sense gratification, pravritti. But nivrittastu mahapalam, with nivritti, or giving up that tendency, or overcoming that tendency, or engaging it in a Krishna conscious way, your actions in a Krishna conscious way, mahapalam, then you get the great fruit, which is self-realization, of Krishna consciousness. So here we're talking, this is called, let's read this again. The example may be given of an ordinary man, that an ordinary man will try to enjoy the company of women for material pleasure. This is called pravritta karma, or the path of sense gratification. A religious person will also enjoy the company of a woman, as opposed to an irreligious person in the previous sentence. A religious person will also enjoy the company of a woman, but under the regulative principles of the Varnashram system. However, one who is fully absorbed in spiritual advancement will ultimately give up all sense gratification derived from sexual association, either regulated or illicit. So here again we see these three different stages. The gross materialist, the fruitive worker who is working under the guidance of the Varnashram, of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, Vedic regulations, still pursuing sense gratification but doing it religiously, and then the person who is beyond all that, not interested in sense gratification at all, doing only Krishna consciousness. So similarly, in the stage of pravritta karma, or ordinary sense gratification, one will eat whatever pleases his tongue. So there's another example. The first example was about association with women. Now this example is about eating. Similarly, in the stage of pravritta karma, or ordinary sense gratification, one will eat whatever pleases his tongue. On the other hand, a materialistic devotee will sometimes cook sumptuous preparations and offer them to the deity, not in order to satisfy the Lord, but rather with the intention of satisfying his own tongue and belly. So now we're not talking about the fruit of karma anymore, we're talking about the sadhana bhakta. He's also in the intermediate stage. He's eating prasadam, but it's more about the taste than about the spiritual advancement he's getting by it. So then finally, one who is samprabhutta, or fully engaged in spiritual consciousness, is never interested in simply gratifying his tongue. He avoids ordinary foods prepared by materialistic persons, and just for the purpose of keeping his body fit for serving Krishna, he eats moderate quantities of food that has first been offered to the deity for the deity's pleasure. So I was appreciating yesterday Adhikarta Prabhu's class, very nice class. He was talking a lot about enjoyment that we have in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes this word, or sense gratification, even we say, sense gratification. So there's sense gratification in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes we just hear this word, sense gratification. It's like, oh no, we don't do sense gratification. That's a bad thing, sense gratification. And we say, no sense gratification for devotees. So sometimes we use that term in that way. But we can't say we don't have sense, because our senses are gratified in so many ways. We have a pleasurable life in Krishna consciousness where our senses are pleased. We don't like the word gratified. We get sensual pleasure, there's no doubt about it. We eat nice food. We see the beautiful deities. Every day when I look at the deities, I think, who sees anything compared to, even materially, who sees anything compared to what we see every day? So much devotion is put into the dressing of the deities and with the flowers and everything, the beautiful presentation. Much nicer than the display window of Neiman Marcus or whatever you want to look at. With their dressed up mannequins. But it's such beauty that we're able to see. So we're able to smell nice things, we taste nice things, we see nice things, we hear nice music. So we certainly get sense gratification. So this is the idea that in Krishna consciousness, we can get sense gratification. When we talk about having some sense gratification, maybe it means, eating a little too much at the Sunday feast. But what it doesn't mean is just going out and doing anything that you want to do once in a while because we're allowed some sense gratification. Just like here it's talking about, it seems to me that sometimes devotees have this idea, we're allowed some sense gratification. But how? Allowing means really nice things. Just like in Prabhupada, there's that famous, I don't know, some of you may have heard it, in the yoga system tapes, that's what they used to be called. Which is now either, I forget whether it's the Perfection of Yoga or Path of Perfection, one of these books. So they're transcriptions of Srila Prabhupada's lectures on the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So there's the verse that one should be moderate in eating, sleeping, sex. So one of the things there, it says recreation. So the devotee asked Prabhupada, well, what does it mean by recreation? What recreation are we allowed, basically, was the idea. So Prabhupada's answer was, everything we do in Krishna consciousness is recreation. He didn't say it's okay, you can go to a restaurant once in a while, or hotel. By the way, when Prabhupada says hotel, he's talking about restaurant. Because in India, you'll see still, it's a restaurant, it says hotel. So, because hotel means where they serve Buddha. So, it doesn't mean sense gratification means like it's okay to go out to a movie once in a while or go out to a restaurant once in a while. And we're allowed, and our sense gratification is we're not living like tapasvis, we're not living in the Himalayas. We hear about the austerities that are performed in former times, the panchagni sitting in a circle of fire and going to a cold place and so on. And I read recently that Pritha Maharaj actually performed that, this panchagni, where you sit with the sun blazing on your head and then a fire on four sides. So that's not sense gratification. come into the temple and see any deities eating the sun, eating the feast. That's Sanskrit. We're allowed to live that way. Just like the Vedantists or the impersonalists, they had this idea that you can't even cultivate spiritual life basically until you take sannyas. And then you spend your whole time studying Vedanta. So Lord Chaitanya and his associates were chanting and dancing. They thought, this is sense gratification. This is Mala. This music, this chanting and dancing, what is this? Incidentally, I've noticed a lot, especially in Chaitanya Bhagavata, but also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a lot of mention about dancing, especially Lord Chaitanya's dancing, how beautiful Lord Chaitanya's dancing was. So our movement in Prabhupada, of course, we always say chanting and dancing. Although sometimes I wonder what part, you know, when Prabhupada says dancing, of course, we have some anecdotes where Prabhupada said, you know, you dance like this, and he showed the Swami step. And one time he stopped the kirtan in Chicago when the things were getting a little wild. That's what I understand. He had Brahmananda, I think, demonstrate, this is how you dance. And I was just reading a conversation last night. I don't know what it was. It was a devotee, Tamal Krishnamurti. This was in New York. There was some article in a magazine, and it was talking about the person who visited the temple. He was quite an open-minded person, apparently. Quite a long article, actually. He had pictures, and one of the things the person mentioned in the article was that there was this sort of cluster of people up front who were dancing frantically. And it was kind of shocking, apparently. This person who was writing the article was a very observant person. Prabhupada at one point said, he's a very good writer. So when he was describing devotees dancing, the Prabhupada said, what is this? What is he talking about? Is dancing? And Tamal Krishnamurti said, well, Prabhupada, sometimes the devotees, you know, they dance kind of like in a modern style. So he said, this is not good. he said, especially it should not be artificial. I thought that was very interesting. In fact, it's significant, I thought, in the Ramita, where it's described, where someone first stood up, I think his name is Stradish. He first danced, the devotees were first just sitting. And also, of course, I think Achyutananda and Brahmananda, they danced in Tompkins Square Park. In the Ramita, it's described how Stradish was dancing in a way that the devotees were kind of uncomfortable with it, in the temple. And then Prabhupada, he said, oh, he's dancing very nicely. So it signifies to Prabhupada that when devotees got to dance, they were feeling ecstasy. Prabhupada will often say that devotees were feeling ecstasy in chanting Hare Krishna. So the Prabhupada, so this is the idea, Prabhupada said, it should not be artificial. What you're feeling, then you naturally dance. Now how we define dancing, that these days, dancing doesn't mean the Swami, if you just say do the Swami step, then it's considered you're not dancing. You dance when your feet leave the ground. That's kind of the way it is in ISKCON. People, why aren't you dancing? I am dancing. I'm doing the Swami stuff. No, that's not dancing. Dancing is when your feet leave the floor. That's dancing. So our mood has kind of changed about this. But these things are all, and this is our enjoyment. We're enjoying that way. But then, of course, there has to be a balance. When it's all about enjoying, when we go to the kirtan thinking, now I'm going to enjoy. This is one thing I think, where do we draw the line, even in our own minds? Are we going there? Sometimes I think there's too much on that side. We're going there to have a good time, and the deities are kind of incidental, and the holy name is just the accompaniment to us having fun. But if you don't get into that whole mood of having fun, and going in the middle of the circle, and swirling around, and all these things, then you're just a mire, just a wallflower. I don't know, it's hard to, I can't make a definitive statement about this, but I think it's something to consider. There's certainly a place for just devotional singing. I know myself, I like to just sing for the deity, not worry about choreographing the kirtan. Just singing. So, anyway, my point here is that this, whether we certainly have enjoyment in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada said, it's all recreation. But that's not our motive. It shouldn't be our motive. Our motive should be to please Krishna, to satisfy Krishna, glorify Krishna. We're here for the glorification of Krishna. We exist for the glorification of Krishna. And if we do that, then we'll feel transcendental ecstasy. And I always think it's so interesting to me that Prabhupada gave us the credit, you might say. Even some would sometimes say, oh, that is Baba. Some devotee did something. You know, one time there was a letter, one devotee was in one temple. He was a pujari there, and he was transferred to another temple. And then he told Prabhupada, I'm missing my former service to those deities. And Prabhupada said, this is Baba. So, that's quite interesting, actually. We don't consider ourselves to be on the Baba platform. There's a long ways to go there. But this is what, getting back to this verse of the purport here, we're talking about a progression here. You start off in complete Maya, then you're practicing, then you get to a stage where it's all about satisfying Krishna. But we have to work our way to get there, to make progress step by step. So let me, this purport, this goes a little longer, let me go back to the purport. The process of spiritual realization gradually brings a conditioned soul from the lowest point of materialistic consciousness to total absorption in loving service to the personality of Godhead. In the beginning, one is taught to dovetail one's enjoying propensities by first offering to the Lord the fruit of one's work. In the advanced stage, however, the impulse to execute fruitive activities, karma chodana, is absent, and one simply engages in the loving service of the Lord without any selfish motive. Now, much of what we get in the Arab scriptures is in the context of traditional Vedic culture. So there, where people are performing their daily karma, their dharma, their karma, they have certain sacrifices that they do every day, and they're concerned with sense gratification. They're doing these things because they want material happiness. They want a happy life, they want a good life, they want prosperity, and so on. So they perform their yajnas and so on, their karmas daily for these things. But in the advanced stage, if one is progressing spiritually, then one loses interest in these things. If one simply engages in the loving service of the Lord without any selfish motive. Sometimes I hear devotees talk about doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And I think, how often do I think that way? I think more what tends to be in my mind is, I'm doing this because I want to get out of Maya, I want to get out of this material world, I want to make spiritual advancement. But I don't usually have to confess, have a conscious thought in my mind that I'm doing this because it pleases Krishna, and I want to do this because it pleases Krishna. In fact, I'm always inspired because everything I do tends to be quite regulated, not necessarily spontaneous, just because of the way my life is. So when I see devotees just on their own initiative do something for the deity, for some service, they don't have to do it. They're not supposed to do it. They're not tied into it. No one's going to know if they don't do it, but just out of their own desire, they do something for Krishna's pleasure, for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. Then I find, oh, that's really bhakti, that's real devotion. When you do things spontaneously out of your own desire to please Krishna, simply to please Krishna. Oh, Krishna will like this. And Prabhupada tells that nice. He says, it's in that old Hare Krishna people film, or whatever it was called. He says, if a materialist will see a flower and say, oh, well, I'll give this to my girlfriend, or something. But the devotee sees and says, oh, what a beautiful flower, let me give it to Krishna. So that's why, of course, we're training our consciousness to come to that. With flowers, maybe it's not so hard. We may naturally think that we don't usually just grab a flower off the tree and start smelling it. You know, oh, this is, oh, look. Now, this time of year, the gardenias are here, and we think, ah, so nice. After the winter, it's so barren. All you get is these, what are they, camellias with no fragrance. So now we see things we can think, let me give this for Krishna's pleasure. So let's go on here. For example, a renounced sannyasi preaching Krishna consciousness, or even a renounced householder preaching Krishna consciousness, is not required to execute all the injunctions governing sense gratification in family life. Ultimately, every human being should take to the transcendental duties of Krishna consciousness. Rather than working to fulfill one's own desires and then offering the results to Krishna, one should fully engage in pleasing the Lord directly according to his own intimate desires. Similar to this, the same idea comes up I forget where I read it. I think it's maybe it's one comment, one of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries, where he says the proper way to offer something to Krishna is you think before you do the thing that I'm going to do this and offer it to Krishna. That's better than, oh, I did this thing, now let me offer it to Krishna. That's good too, but it's better if the intention right from the beginning is, I'm doing this for Krishna. That's basically the idea that's here also, just read. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, any attempt to enjoy the material world, either religiously or irreligiously, ultimately will be full of contradictions. I'm not sure what that means exactly. How would that be full of contradictions? Any attempt to enjoy the material world, either religiously or irreligiously, ultimately will be full of contradictions. I guess maybe the idea is it's a contradiction because, well, if you're religious, then you're worshiping God. The idea is that you're offering something to God. But if it's about enjoying the material world, then that's a contradiction. Maybe that's what the idea is here. Once you come to the true platform of desirelessness, pure love of Godhead, and thus solve all of the problems of life. Jai, solve all the problems of life. So what an unspoken or unwritten assumption here is that we have to do things to progress step by step to get to that platform. I often think of these stages of bhajan and anantana vritti. So bhajan means sadhana, we can say, bhajana, or sadhana. So by sadhana, then you go through the next stage, you can say, is where the purification really takes place. So in my own mind, I've never really seen this exactly, written this way, but I tend to think that the bhajan means, basically the bhajan has to be perfect. Get your bhajan together, your sadhana together. When it's bhakta, your sadhana, then anantana vritti means then you do the really, the stuff inside. First you get the outside right, you might say. Follow the four of the principles, chant Hare Krishna, do all so many other things. You often hear you chant 16 rounds, follow the principles and go back to Godhead. And I was saying, did Prabhupada really say that? I looked in the database for it, and Prabhupada actually said it a lot. But then at other times he said, one must be free of all material desires to go back to Godhead. And he also said one must chant 16 rounds offenselessly. And of course, one of the offenses is to maintain material attachments or disobey the rules of the spiritual master. So chanting 16 rounds, you can have to fluff that out a little bit, maybe. Maybe there's a little bit more to it than that. So because why do Prabhupada say so many other things? Why do we have enough of devotion for it to do? Is everything about just making sure we chant our rounds? I think that's maybe not quite the intent of it. You have to chant without offense, which means you have to do all the other things. So if you're doing that right, because the idea that sometimes comes up is when are we on the transcendental platform? So when you're following the orders of the spiritual master, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm just chanting 16 rounds and following the regular principles and then I spend the day at the mall window shopping or, and I never do any service and I never go to the temple but I chant my 16 rounds and I'm not breaking the regular principles? So does that mean I'm transcendental? No, Prabhupada said we should be engaged 24 hours a day. We should be chanting 24 hours a day. So, and then I see sometimes like, I'm so impressed, I think. I can't even imagine these devotees that Prabhupada Govinda is inspiring so many others to stay up all night long on major Ekadashi. I can't even imagine it. Let's do it. It's like, I'm going to have to take the dust of your feet. Then I think, well, somebody is doing that, and somebody else is chanting 16 rounds following the principles and not doing anything else. Are they going to get the same result? I don't really think that. Is it possible they're both going to get the same result? So the point is, we have to have really good sadhana. We have to be very serious about it. And then, in other words, you get that together, you get your program together, and then as a result of that program, then these things start, then the more subtle desires start going away. Now then we start to really developing the 26 qualities of the devotee and so on, and the humility comes, and all this inner purification really takes place when you have the externals, you might say. When you have those in place, then the inner purification is going to work. Otherwise, it can go on for a very long time. I just came across, it's getting a little kind of drawing around here, but let me add one more thing. It was quite shocking to me because I think I mentioned I'm editing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rama Maharaj's version of it, a translation of it. So I came across a verse in the second chapter, which I'm trying to memorize, but I won't stumble over it. But the idea of the verse is that for one who has served Lord Vasudeva for thousands of lifetimes, the holy name is always manifest on his lips. So I read the translation and I thought, my first thought was, being a cynic than I am, worship Vasudeva for thousands of lifetimes and he didn't go back to Godhead? You're trying to do it in one lifetime. If I don't do it in one lifetime, forget it, I'm not dead. It's over. The verse says, one who worships Vasudeva for thousands of lifetimes, then he's always chanting Hare Krishna. So I had to stop. Why didn't he go back to Godhead? So there's this one, a two-sentence purport, a commentary by Jiva Goswami. And he says that Vasudeva indeed keeps the devotee in this having repeated births because he wants to increase the intensity of his longing for him. So then I realized, oh, when you have that kind of longing, then you're ready to go back to Godhead. And then it doesn't matter, actually, if you go back to Godhead or not. But if you're thinking, okay, I'll give one life, if that doesn't work, forget it. Then you don't have the longing, because you have to have the longing. It's not just mechanical, I'm going to get my rounds done today. You know, like Prabhupada said, you pull down the 16th bead, now I can do any damn thing I want. No, it's definitely, there's more to it than that. You want to come to this really the transcendental stage where you don't have to worry about any material desires for sense gratification. All your desires are satisfied in the service of Krishna. All right, let me read the translation again. One who has fixed mood in his mind as the goal of life should give up activities based on sense gratification and should instead execute work governed by the Rigata principles for advancement. When, however, one is fully engaged in searching out the ultimate truth of the soul, one should not accept the scriptural injunctions governing fruitive activities. Janashtami Prabhu. Oh, I should have looked at Madhumati. Let's go to Madhumati first. Madhumati Prabhu. Looks like the mic is not on.
It'll turn on.
He just has to turn it, hit the button. Ah, okay.
Thank you, Mom. Just a quick point about the word bhava. I was thinking that certainly there is a platform bhava, but the bhava word itself is... you mentioned about mechanical and with feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess when I hear Prabhupada saying like bhava, I think, in other words, it's
not
doing
it with feelings.
It's doing it with feelings.
That's a good point, because in fact, often, I've mentioned this before, even the word prema is used in our books, even between exchanges between ordinary materialistic people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a technical use of these words, and then there's a more generic use of the word.
The question about having those feelings, you know, coming to the platform in the end, you were mentioning about real longing. And I was thinking, I think the only way, at least for myself, I'm thinking the only way that I would be in a situation where I'm really longing for Krishna would be more when there are difficulties, you know, and you're crying out for Krishna.
Oh.
It seems like I was thinking about Kunti's prayers, she's, and so the question comes in my mind is that, is that the way to pray to Krishna, Kunti's prayers, that then I will long for you, is that longing just that, free me from this material suffering?
It seems like there are stages in the longing also. That verse always strikes me as somewhat curious, because Apunar Bhava Darshanam, the word is the result. She says, I like it because I can see you. And what's the result? Then I get liberation. So you think, well, is that really what she's aspiring for, is the liberation and not the darshan? But it kind of comes across like that in the verse, Apunar Bhava Darshanam. When I see you, then I won't have to see repeated birth and death. So, in one sense, just like Gajendra, he admits that this isn't the best thing that I pray to you because I'm suffering. So, in one sense, that's true. But I would think of what we would say is that that's a beginning. That's good. At least we're calling out to Krishna with that. But, of course, the gopis longing is something completely different. They're calling because they're suffering. Of course, they're longing for Krishna because they're suffering, but it's a different kind of suffering. Of course, they're suffering because they want to serve him. Ultimately, that's what it's about. They want to serve Krishna. This is an important point, actually, because a lot of times when we read about Krishna and the gopis, it seems to be about the gopis enjoying with Krishna. But it's really not about that. It's about their serving. They want to serve Krishna. So that's the longing that we have to come to. So it does seem as if they're different kinds of longing and the suffering. Now, this idea of calling out to Krishna when we're suffering, of course, that's a good thing. Because there can be, the other side is that you complain to Krishna. Krishna, why are you making me suffer? I don't deserve this, and so on. Or they from the completely materialistic person's side, blame God for one's suffering. So if we understand that they become bombs, that actually my suffering is my own doing, and Krishna, please, let me just serve your lotus feet. I want to serve you. And then I know that that's the solution, of course. Ultimately, we know that that's the solution. We have that philosophical understanding. But probably in our stage, any longing for Krishna is good. Devotees express it sometimes when they travel and they think, oh, I was missing the association. Suppose you have to go visit your family if they're not devotees, and then you come back in the association of devotees and you realize, oh, so nice to be back. Or devotees who have to travel for business and so on, may thinking, oh, I can't wait to get back to the temple. Big festival is coming up. I get to see all the devotees. I get to do some service. I get to cook the feast or whatever. So that's nice on our stages. We have different opportunities where we can long for service to Krishna. And if we get attached to our service, we long for it if it's threatened in some way. So we can get some hints of this, which ultimately is a very elevated emotion in Krishna consciousness, that longing of the soul. Samutkanta, is that what it is? Lala Samayi. Okay, Jamashtami Prabhu.
A couple points. Vishwanath Chaitanya Thakur's commentary on 6:17, which is cited, that one who's regulated in eating, sleeping, recreation, and work, he becomes freed from the pains of material existence. Vishwanath Chaitanya Thakur has a more constrictive understanding of the recreation. He says, recreation for the Vaishnava is walking. but in response to Madam Atif's inquiry, there's a reference from Hanuman Chintamani that one undergoes many distresses in the material realm, and it brings him to the point where he loses all hope for happiness as a result of karma or happiness within the material realm. And then that's a qualification for it's actually crying to the holy name to have that. So, and then in Chaitanya Bhagavat, I can give the exact references, but there's a point made that the crying is not one who's seeking liberation from the material distresses. It's crying from the eternal happiness of the soul. And that crying, and in the subsequent verses, the crying actually allows one to chant Shudanam. One has to cry in order to understand that Krishna and Krishna's name are not different. So that's how we get there, you know, through this repetitive distresses, but handling it in a Krishna conscious way. And then we give up all hope for happiness in the material realm. That our only happiness is in service to Krishna. And then we can genuinely cry, which is my understanding from the, and I can give you these references. They're pretty, pretty remarkable. One other point, you know, Nagash Prabhu, you were bringing up about, you cited Vishnu Charita Thakur, that we should, before making the offering, we should plan on it being pleasing to Krishna. So then the obvious question is, well, how do we know whether it's pleasing to Krishna or not? And there's a reference with Prabhupada, was on the bad, and I think it was a Gita class in 74, and he describes how, we're servants of Krishna, just as a king has many servants, and the servants are always trying to please the king. And then he ends this little reference by saying, the servants of the king are always trying to please Krishna, or please the king, so we should always be trying to please Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, then we're pleased. So this kind of, like you were describing, how Prabhupada repeatedly said, when they chant Hare Krishna, they're experiencing transcendental ecstasy. So when we get that reciprocation in the course of our service, we've done something that's pleasing to Krishna, we'll know that. And so then we can kind of keep following that trajectory, and he'll confirm, you know, that, oh yeah, that's, you did the right thing, I'm pleased, you know, and we know because we're pleased. We're experiencing that transcendental ecstasy. Anyway.
Okay, Madonna Hankaru is jumping off his seat back there. Dancing.
I'm like that a lot, though. I was thinking also, another time Prabhupada answered it by saying that, because we don't know how to please Krishna, you please the spiritual master, Yasya Prasada Bhagavad Prasada, and he'll tell you, yes, this is pleasing to Krishna. That's how I know anything about mm-hmm. Krishna, is just trying to please the spiritual master, and that seems to work really well. And when I read this verse a long time ago, it stuck in my mind, the 2:14 verse, Matta Sparsis. It says that one has to learn how to tolerate happiness and distress. So due to my nature, I'm always asking people questions. So I said, how do you tolerate happiness? And you know, a lot of people don't know how to tolerate happiness. The distress seems quite easy, you know, tate nu kampam, but how do you tolerate happiness? So because the devotee is requested to be introspective, to think about things, some of the thoughts that came to me was, the material energy, there's something fundamentally wrong with the material energy. As far as the living entity and the material energy working together, it produces a lot of bad effects. So since the source of the material energy is also Krishna, there, and he's all good, there must be something fundamentally wrong with me accepting it. And by meditating on that, I've also understood that the happiness of the material energy also has that same kind of heart flaw in it that has me connecting to the material energy instead of the internal potency. And because you find that devotees sometimes have more trouble tolerating happiness. You know, that can get you connected to the material energy even faster than distress.
What do you mean tolerating happiness?
He wants to know what it means.
Can you explain what is the tolerating happiness?
What does it mean to tolerate happiness? I don't know. Your explanation is good enough. Well, one thing I think is in the next verse, it says one who is equal in happiness and distress is certainly eligible for liberation. So in that sense, you might say tolerance in the sense that whether you're happy or sad, you'll still go on and you do your duty in Krishna consciousness. Of course, but the idea of the word, and I was thinking, well, what's the exact word? The word is tatiksha, which does mean tolerate, and usually tolerant in that sense means something you don't like. Then as you were talking, I was also thinking of Baruka in the act of devotion. He had to tolerate, he had to work through his ecstasy, control his ecstasy. That's another thing. His happiness was disturbing his service to Krishna. Suppose that's, but we're talking about material happiness here, so that probably doesn't apply exactly.
I was thinking another source of Nrisimhadev before he departed from Prahlad Maharaj. Says the verse is 7th canto, chapter 10, I believe 13. Bhogena punnam kushalena papam. So, Prahlad, while you are ruling this kingdom, the happiness of sense enjoyment will come, and consider this as a result of pious activities, and be absorbed in me, and do every day some sadhana, so it will nullify the sinful activities. I was thinking, like, what is this? Prahlad has anything to do with sinful? But Nrisimhadev still stresses that every devotee must do sadhana every day. And so his tolerance is when the bad thing comes, is the passing by of impious activities. Good thing comes, is the result of pious activity. But he's not involved either one. Even though he's enjoying, apparently.
Well, I guess a nice example is Dhruva Maharaj, because
yes.
Ultimately he didn't want that happiness, material happiness. But he had to tolerate it. He had to accept it because Banubhadev was giving it to him. And same thing with Priyavrata. There's an interesting verse there when Priyavrata is, although he was on a very elevated platform, he had to come down to rule. And I think it's Lord Brahma that says, extraordinarily, I think maybe that's the word, the Lord has asked you to enjoy material life, basically.
Yeah.
Extraordinarily, amazingly, the Lord has asked you to enjoy material life, so you have to do it. So you also have to tolerate the happiness of material life to do his service.
Maybe Prachetas is also similar. That Prachetas, 10 brothers, their father was priest Prachin Barhi to renounce, and their 10 sons were told to marry and enjoy. And even though they are already liberated. So it's kind of like a tolerance in a sense, like voluntarily tolerated.
Just the last part of that verse was without being disturbed.
Yeah.
So the disturbed means your sambandha connection with Krishna. So you're maintaining all that, your clarity.
I have a question. What would reduce a regulated activity or service into becoming mechanical? How would you explain mechanical?
I didn't hear the first part of the question.
What would reduce, you were bringing up the point about some devotees may do something spontaneous and wonderful.
So what would reduce it to becoming mechanical? Is that the question?
But you were comparing the spontaneous activity to your style, your regulated life and activity and devotional service.
Yeah.
So what would reduce that regulated style, if you want to say, to becoming mechanical, which we want to avoid?
Well, time. You do the same thing over and over again, it becomes mechanical if you don't constantly try to make it not mechanical.
But what's the feature of mechanical and not mechanical? Even though you're...
Well, in one sense it's mechanical because it's regulated. It's
okay.
Like, the bicycle wheel, it's turning and turning and turning and turning. So we do it day after day after day, and we know in that sense, by nature, it's mechanical. Nature is mechanical, the sun rises and sets according to a schedule. But it doesn't have to be, they're using mechanical in the sense of without feeling, like you're a robot, mechanical, that's a mechanical person. So there's no feeling there. There's no intent to improve. And I always think how the morning program is, it's such a good opportunity to try to be not mechanical, because we can also fall into that. say the prayers without thinking at all what we're saying, without knowing what we're saying. I mean, I find it a real challenge, and something I try to do is to try to, a lot of times we say the English and the translation, I say, oh, I completely spaced out. I wasn't thinking at all what I was saying. I was thinking of this person over here, or this microphone, or whatever. And I thought, well, I mean, now we're going to do the Sanskrit or Bengali. Let me try to pay attention now to that. So I find it to be a challenge because I'm trying to make it so it's not mechanical. I just come here, punch the clock every day. And then leave again. Okay, I went to the morning program, but there's really, literally, there's infinite opportunity for depth, increasing the depth of our Krishna consciousness just during the morning program. So it's certainly what some of us really probably wanted us to do, to pay attention, to be conscious and aware of what we're doing. I think let's go. Yeah, one of the two is already got her turn.
I was just thinking, lack of enthusiasm in our regulation. When there's not enthusiasm, that makes
it enthusiasm. Yeah, we try to cultivate enthusiasm. Well, as we said, if you don't have it, then just fake it, basically. Try to act enthusiastic.
So, on pleasing Krishna, once upon a time, I said to Srila Prabhupada, I can't please Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said to me, you shouldn't think you can please Krishna, nor should you think you cannot please Krishna, but you should know what pleases Krishna, but always feel yourself falling short of pleasing the Lord.
Oh, that's nice.
Another point I have also about sense gratification. I remember reading in the Bhagavatam, I believe, that the principle of sense gratification is both on the material plane and the spiritual plane.
Mm-hmm.
For one's own personal sense gratification, that's material. And spiritual is to satisfy the senses of Krishna or sense gratification of Krishna.
Right. Yeah,
the principle of sense gratification is there.
Mm-hmm. Hi, do you want me to wrap it up?
It seems to me that the difference between mechanical and non-mechanical is that there's active reciprocation going on. You know, that one's trying to please Krishna, and then Krishna immerses one in bliss. And so that's what
seems
to me to kick it out of that category. So that, you know, whenever one's doing something, it's with that idea in mind. You know, that this is to please Krishna. That's why I'm doing it. And then it is a whole different attitude.
But we can't be mechanical even if we're not feeling reciprocation. In other words, we're talking about the our side of the equation. We have to, you know, actively try to give our heart to Krishna. Of course, what you're saying is then you will feel something in return.
Yeah, it's like this applying the Abhilasita Sunyam principle, and, you know, that definition, you know, in our activities. And
yeah.
It usually works pretty good. That's what
it's doing. All right, moving over the time, we'll stop. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much.